In 1920, Einstein said it even more strongly. According to the general theory of relativity, space without ether is unthinkable. For in such space, not only would there be no propagation of light, but also no space-time intervals in the physical sense. What Einstein is saying here is that without some sort of ether in space, there could be no time intervals as we now know them. Our clocks would appear to be completely frozen if their atoms could even hold together at all. Thus, in Einstein's own words, time is powered by an energy in space. And this energy is not all smooth and even wherever you go. It varies continuously from point to point. The more space we move through, the more of this time energy we move through. And depending on how fast we go, the rate of time will speed up or slow down along the way. If we can accelerate the flow of this energy in a given local area, then we may well be able to create effects similar to those allegedly discovered by Sid Hurwitz. Unfortunately, no additional information on Hurwitz or his discoveries can be found. Most likely, he was either paid very well, ordered to keep his mouth shut, or permanently silenced. Repeating cycles of time. If time is an energy in space that we move through, then how can we be so sure it only travels forward into what we think of as the future? Einstein assumed that time is one-dimensional, meaning it can only move forward in a single straight line. That may have been his single biggest mistake. Is it possible that when the Earth returns to the same orbital position it had been in before, relative to the Sun, that it could be returning to an area of time, a structured region within the source field that has similar properties and influences as it had before? That's exactly what Professor Schnoll discovered. Graph out any physical, chemical, biological, or radioactive reaction and study the fingerprint you get from it. Now come back exactly one rotation of the Earth, 24 hours later, and your graph will be almost identical to the one you saw 24 hours before. Then check again 1 year later, and a very similar fingerprint again shows up. This means that the forward and backward racing movement of time that Schnoll discovered is not random or haphazard. Though we don't yet know exactly why the graphs race forward and backward the way they do, we do know that the patterns repeat themselves according to the Earth's basic cycles. In short, every molecule on Earth, down at the quantum level, is somehow being directly affected by the Earth's movement through space in repeating patterns. If this is really true, then we have to rewrite almost every scientific law we now take for granted. We're already well on our way, thanks to our ancient inheritance. So I say, let's go for it. Professor Schnoll found these repeating patterns in the following intervals: at approximately 24 hours, at 27.28 days, the moon's orbit around the Earth's relative to the center of the galaxy, and at three time intervals close to a year, 364.4, 365.2, and 366.6 days. The Earth takes 365.2422 days to revolve around the Sun, and one of Schnoll's cycles was 365.2 days. So it's a very, very close fit. Schnoll obviously didn't have enough data to witness these cycles unfolding over much longer periods of time, like the 25,920-year precession of the equinoxes. All he did was study the behavior of matter and energy, and found it was doing very strange things, and these patterns repeated in cycles. Further research is necessary to see if the movements of the other planets also create the same effects Schnoll discovered. But it seems very foolish to think it would only work with the Earth and the Moon. The flow of time is likely getting pushed and pulled by the movements of the Earth, the Moon, and the planets in reliable, consistent ways that will repeat, nicely and neatly, from one orbital cycle to the next. Once we bring in the evidence from chapters 9 and 10, we realize that time may have cyclical effects. Time appears to have structure in it, and that structure in turn influences the biological cycles discovered by Burr and Pop, as well as our conscious minds, as we're now seeing with the Flynn effect and human evolution as we head toward the end of the 25,920-year cycle. These time cycles may not be arbitrary. Some are directly related to the Earth's movements through space. Now, thanks to the work of Professor Schnoll, we're seeing that this structure in time is actually affecting the basic behavior of physical matter. Space and time. Skeptics might say that Schnoll's discoveries are just statistical noise and have no real relevance to our large-scale world. Or they may write it off as some interesting little-known new effect in quantum physics. Maybe in another 22 years, enough scientists will believe Schnoll that his discovery is then taught in schools. Either way, any reputable scientist would expect that if all atoms, molecules, and energy waves on Earth were speeding up and slowing down, then we would need to see it happening to normal-size objects as well, speeding up or slowing down as they travel through space. It is common knowledge that satellite probes we've sent out into deep space are doing just that, slowing down, even though they're not supposed to. Gravity should get weaker, not stronger, as we head out of the solar system. In 2001, David Whitehouse of BBC News reported that four different space probes were slowing down, including Pioneer 10 and Pioneer 11, which are on opposite ends of the solar system. This also included Galileo as it sped out to Jupiter, and Ulysses as it orbited the Sun. Dr. John Anderson from NASA's JPL said, "It is almost as if the probes were not behaving according to the known law of gravity. We've been working on this problem for several years, and we have accounted for everything we could think of." The plot thickened in 2008, when the same NASA scientist added three more space probes to the puzzle, bringing it up to a total of seven. Galileo was again mentioned, but we also learned that the NEAR mission to the asteroid Eros, the Cassini mission to Saturn, and the Rosetta mission to rendezvous with a comet all experienced changes in their traveling speed that could not be explained. In this case, as each of them flew past the Earth in order to pick up speed for their trips into space, they would either slow down or speed up, depending on the direction they were traveling in. Dr. Anderson, now working as a retiree, said, "I am feeling both humble and perplexed by this. There is something very strange going on with spacecraft motions. We have no convincing explanation for either the Pioneer anomaly or the flyby anomaly." As one example, NEAR came toward the Earth at 20 degrees south latitude and flew away at 72 degrees south. This path caused it to fly 13 millimeters faster per second than it was supposed to. That might not seem like very much, but it was definitely real. The effect could be studied with extreme precision. NASA bounced radio waves off of the probe and could measure its speed with an accuracy of 0.1 millimeters per second. So a 13 millimeter change was easy to spot. Does this mean that space probes always speed up or slow down as they swing around the Earth? Strangely not. The Messenger space probe made one pass that was symmetrical, coming in at about 31 degrees north latitude and leaving at 32 degrees south. In that case, its speed hardly changed at all. Dr. Anderson found that the more a space probe angled away from the Earth's equator as it passed by, the more its speed would change. And the more it made a nice, even path around the Earth's equator, like with MESSENGER, the less its speed changed. This led Dr. Anderson to conclude that the movement of the Earth must somehow be responsible for causing these changes in how fast the space probes are traveling. But no one seems to know why this is happening. This is not something you can explain with Einstein's theories of relativity as they now stand, but they are definitely a great start. Even if this is nothing more than a mysterious gravitational effect, although NASA said this is not explainable by any conventional means, it would still force us to rewrite the laws of physics. Then again, what if it has nothing to do with gravity? What if the flow of time itself is actually slowing down or speeding up? In Einstein's model, time isn't expected to speed up or slow down in a given area of empty space, at least not by very much. It should essentially move at the same speed wherever you go, other than a black hole. It's really only how fast you travel through space that determines the rate of time. The Pioneer and flyby anomalies are different from that, because they actually suggest that the rate of time can change in a given local area. And when we bring in Schnoll, we have stunning new evidence that this is happening all the time, and we just didn't know about it before. When our satellites speed up or slow down as they pass by the Earth, we're only looking at a change of 13 millimeters per second, which is only 1/1,000,000th of their normal traveling speed. So it is a subtle effect that was easily missed for years. The rotation of the Earth appears to be creating a ripple in the flow of time, almost like a lawn sprinkler, spraying out time flow as the Earth spins, caused by the movement of what we are calling the source field. What if the sun's energy could also give a nice little push to the flow of time? Not a huge amount, but more like the 13 millimeters per second we saw with our space probes. If true, this would be most likely visible when the sun's energetic activity suddenly peaked. Based on the worldwide changes Schnoll observed, we may discover that every atom and every energy wave on Earth would be affected by the sun's behavior. And furthermore, since our brains are electrical systems, perhaps a sudden unexpected hiccup in the flow of time would cause some disruptions in our brainwave patterns as well, which might make us feel uncomfortable, stressed out, and overly emotional. If so, that might lead to outbreaks of war, violence, and economic collapse. Solar cycles and consciousness effects. Enter A.L. Chejevsky, a Russian scientist in the early 20th century. Chejevsky created an index of mass human excitability to study how chaotic and turbulent life on Earth was in 72 different countries for almost 2,500 years, from 500 BC to AD 1922. He looked for any obvious signals that people were really unhappy, such as wars, revolutions, riots, economic upsets, expeditions, and migrations. He also ranked how severe these events were by how many people were involved. To his amazement, Chejevsky found that fully 80% of the most significant events occurred during the 5 years of maximum sunspot activity. The sunspot cycle does not always run in an 11-year interval. Sometimes it comes sooner, sometimes later. Nonetheless, whenever solar activity was at its maximum, a whopping 80% of all the most negative events took place. Sadly, Chejevsky served 30 years in Soviet prisons for merely pointing out that the Russian Revolution of 1917 occurred during the height of the sunspot cycle. The communists were adamant in their belief that there is no God. The last thing they wanted was to be accused of creating their revolution right when the sun's activity was influencing them into doing it. Now think back to what we learned in Chapter 5. 7,000 people were able to reduce worldwide terrorism by 72% simply by meditating. They also reduced random acts of violence, deaths, and hostilities between nations. With Schnoll, we discovered that the movement of our planet around the sun affects every atom on Earth in very measurable ways. Now, with Chejevsky, we see that solar activity has a direct effect on how we feel. As the sun's activity increases, we feel an increasing sense of stress, and violence breaks out all over the world. As the sun's activity decreases, we recover from the stress, and only 20% of the most negative events take place. This effect held true for the entire 2,500-year length of time that Chejevsky studied. If our model is correct, then we can assume that these changes in solar activity would also create changes in the flow of time. This, in turn, could interrupt the normally smooth flow of our brainwave patterns, causing us to feel uncomfortable without really knowing why. It would be very difficult for us to measure any changes in the flow of time with clocks based on Earth, as they would also speed up or slow down at the same rate as the flow of time itself. However, we could check the speed of the Earth's rotation because the sun is at a fixed position in the sky. So we have something stable, which is outside the Earth, to compare it to. Interplanetary changes in the flow of time. In 1959, there was a huge solar storm, and the Earth's rotation slowed down at the exact same time. This made the length of a typical day suddenly increase. Then an even greater storm occurred in August 1972, and according to John Gribben and NASA scientist Stephen Plageman in the prestigious journal Nature, we have indeed found a discontinuous change in the length of day immediately after that event. The Earth hiccuped in its orbit during a massive solar storm. Indeed, many scientists have found clear connections between solar activity and the length of the day. In fact, there is a perfect relationship between the amount of solar activity and the speed of the Earth's rotation throughout much of the last 40 years of the 20th century, from 1960 onward. Bear in mind that 1950 was the first year that we had really good data to track the exact length of a day. And prior to 1920, the available data is even worse. Solar activity also changes the speed that our atmosphere is traveling around the Earth, though there is a delay between the solar activity and the resulting change in the overall speed of the atmosphere. According to Jurevich in 1990, the physical mechanism of these phenomena is still unknown. Another possible example of a change in the flow of time occurs when the planet Mercury starts moving backward or retrograde in its path through our night sky. Almost every astrologer will tell you from personal and professional experience that during this time, mechanical devices seem more likely to break down, perhaps because of disruptions in the flow of electricity. And people seem more likely to get into arguments with each other and have problems erupt. Even mainstream media outlets like Wired Magazine and CNET have commented on this curious phenomenon, thanks to the brave journalism of Daniel Turdeman. Now that we know about Professor Schnoll's work, we can speculate about whether the flow of time itself gets disrupted when planets go into retrograde movement. In August 2010, researchers from Stanford and Purdue universities added even more new data to the mix. These scientists were studying the decay rates of radioactive materials, just like Schnoll had done. As far as they knew, these rates were supposed to be constant and unchanging, but that's not what happened. Instead, they found some new variations on what Schnoll had already been tracking for years. Decay rates would slightly decrease during the summer and increase during the winter, experimental error, and environmental conditions have all been ruled out, and there seems to be only one answer. As the Earth is closer to the Sun during the winter months in the Northern Hemisphere, our planet's orbit is slightly eccentric or elongated, could the Sun be influencing decay rates?